Welcome to another episode of COVID Chronicles, a podcast by, for, and about people affiliated with Portland Mennonite Church in Portland, Oregon. I'm your host, Gloria Nussbaum, and my guest is Karen Hartman. Karen, welcome. It's great to have you with me.
Thank you so much. Thank you for giving me this invitation.
Absolutely. Well, we like to start at the beginning and find out where people come from. So, Karen, where were you born?
I was actually born in Chicago, Illinois.
And what were your parents doing there?
My father was an executive on the move upward for General Motors. And so throughout most of my childhood in the early 60s, that was the era of upward mobility for executives. So we were continuously transferred, very much like a military family. And so we moved all over Illinois and Iowa. And then our most dramatic move came while I was in the middle of high school from the Midwest to the Los Angeles area in California. So a radical culture change. And coming when I was right in the middle of those high school years where friends are so imperative to your life.
So how long did you actually live in Chicago?
Well, in the city itself, probably only, I would say, 2 or 3 years. And then the rest of our time were suburbs and southern Illinois. And then we lived for a time in Iowa, all in that area, but definitely grew up with a Midwestern heart. And my parents were German Lutheran for many generations. So I was always attending a Lutheran church in those years. Every time we moved to a new town, that was one of the first things they did, was to find a Lutheran church. And I was eventually confirmed in the Lutheran church at 13.
How many siblings do you have and where do you fit in the family?
I am the oldest by 5 years. I have one sister, and she is still living in Ventura County, California, which is where I moved from to come to Portland.
So you had 5 years as an only child.
I did. And then when she was born, my mother had had a very, very difficult pregnancy and a lot of illness. And so really from the time that my sister was born, I became probably a second mother to her. And that has had blessings and pitfalls in our relationship, but we're very, very close and we stay in contact all of the time. And she's come up to visit many times since I've moved to Portland.
So in those growing up years, pick one of the places that you were living and tell me why it was a good place to be at that point in your life.
That's a very good question. I would say probably one that stands out in my mind was when I was in sixth grade. We lived in Peoria, Illinois, which is south near Springfield. And at that time, we lived in a little subdivision that was outside of the city limits. And so I attended a more rural school setting, and I went by bus, and my school was literally one classroom per grade from kindergarten through the end of high school. And it seemed to me that most all of the other students were related. There just seemed to be so many. I remember the Carmody's seemed to have so many cousins, and they were all interconnected. And we were given days off for farming activities so that it would fit in with their schedule. And that was just a real education for me as a little girl who had been basically raised in the suburbs to be in an area where it was a little bit more rural. And I just loved it. I loved that whole atmosphere and had a lot of friends whose families had been farm raisers their entire lives. And I think that was just a really sweet period of history for me, and a safe environment and a lot of exploration. Of course, I grew up in the generation where you could still get on your bike in the morning on a summer day and then not come home until it was dinner time. And so a lot of opportunity to explore those back country roads and so forth. So that stands out in my mind, I would say.
In those early years of school, mm-hmm. was there a subject that was starting to stand out as something you really enjoyed, or maybe the opposite, one that you really didn't like?
I would say without question, I loved reading and writing. I loved English in general. I loved writing little stories and poems, and I could not read enough. My father had started taking me to the library when I was 2, and he himself is still an avid reader and really impressed upon me the value of reading. And so that was really my strong suit and probably still remains so. And I do not like math. I didn't like it then, and I still don't.
We have that in common. When you were a child, what kinds of chores did you have? What was expected of you in terms of family? Now, you've already said you kind of helped raise your sister.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot was expected of me. I had regular chores. As I grew with age, more and more, I would say, house cleaning chores. So I definitely was schooled well. My mother was an impeccable housekeeper, and I am still a neat fanatic myself. So there were things of, you know, cleaning out the bathrooms and emptying the trashes and mopping the floors, that kind of task. But I also, because I had only a sister and I was the oldest, my dad used me a lot for outdoor help. So I started learning how to mow the lawn when I was probably, 9 or 10. And if you've ever seen Midwestern yards, they're quite big. So I had a lot of responsibility to mow the lawn and do the edging and rake the leaves and so forth. So I think it gave me a great work ethic. And definitely told me the value of hard work and let me see early on what responsibilities it took to be a homeowner.
Did you ever wish you had a brother?
Always. Always wanted to have a brother, always had this vision of having an older brother who was probably a combination of a lot of the brothers that I saw on TV family shows, and he would always be understanding and protect me. As I grew older, I developed some relationships with some of the men who were my coworkers, and there are two particularly now who call me sister, and I think of them as my brothers, and that's a really precious relationship bond for me.
Now, you said you made this major move to California when you were...
I was 15.
Talk a bit about what that was like, the trauma or the excitement or...
I would say probably more traumatic. I am by nature an introvert, and even though all of those moves taught me some skill sets on how to reach out to people and, you know, assimilate into a new area, it was such a dramatic culture change that it felt very traumatic. It was very far away from my grandparents and extended family, and I felt very alone. And that first, I still can remember, we moved to our new home just about 3 days before school started. And I can remember sitting in the bathroom by myself on the floor so that nobody would walk in. I had the door closed and I prayed and I said, you know, Lord, I think I'm going to go through high school without any friends because I won't fit in here. And I've heard all the stories about California kids. They all wear sunglasses and they all go to the beach and they all take drugs and I'm never going to find a friend and I'm too much of a little Midwestern nerd. And the irony of that is that in that high school setting, I met some friends who I am still friends with now, some 50 years later, and through their invitation, actually began attending the church dynamic that would become my future in my relationship with the Lord. And so, and we moved to Thousand Oaks, California, which is north of Los Angeles, and in between Los Angeles and Santa Barbara, it's in Ventura County. And that really remained my home. And of my family unit, I was the only one that stayed in California. My parents were transferred out and moved many times after, and so did my sister. And I stayed there and fell in love with the land that I didn't want to move to.
Did you then, or do you now, see that God answered your prayer?
Yes. Yes, I really do. And what makes me still laugh about that prayer was that I actually think the number of kids that I knew in those days, even though that was now the 70s, who really were on drugs and did what I imagined was actually pretty minuscule compared to the number of kids that I got to be friends with who were pretty much God-honoring, straight and narrow kids like me. So, yes. Which just showed me a lot about perceptions. We build perceptions, we create stereotypes, and I think it was a good education for me to see. And because the area around Los Angeles is so much more multicultural, I think it actually really broadened my horizons and helped me to grow So I'm very thankful for that. I think the Lord intervened there and changed the direction of my life with that move.
Did you have any jobs during high school?
Yes. I started babysitting when I was in middle school and had a paper route. And then by the time that I was in high school, my first official job with a paycheck was at the library. I was a page at the library and put the books away and did some checking out of books. But simultaneously, I started cleaning houses for people that I knew through our church, particularly working women. And so I built up quite a reputation on that. And so all the way through high school, worked between those two jobs. And I can't remember ever not working. And I'm still working. So always part of my life.
When it was time to go to college, or maybe I should back up and say, what did you think was going to happen after high school?
I had always thought that if we had stayed in Illinois, that I would attend Northwestern University and major in journalism. That was sort of my plan in those early years. After my recommitment, I would say, to my faith and a more energetic faith that I had in the Lord by attending a non-denominational independent Christian church, I started to change my aspirations and wanted to become a teacher. And so my college choice at the time was Pacific Christian College in Fullerton, California. It's in Orange County. It was located, still is, across the street from California State University of Fullerton. And so at the time, they had a cooperative program where you could minor in Bible at Pacific, and then I could take the classes that I needed in general education to become a teacher at Cal State Fullerton. And because I was going to be putting myself through school, that was also more economically advantageous. And so that school, the college, has now become Hope International University. They expanded. But at the time, that was my plan. And I am the first college graduate on both sides of my family. And by that time, my dad had reached a very, very high level within General Motors. And his desire for me was to follow in his footsteps. And by the time I was graduating from high school, I was working part-time for the Sears that was at the local mall in our area. And they'd offered me an opportunity to go into their management training program. And my dad thought that was ideal, that I would have a great retirement and I would have profit sharing and all of the benefits. And at that time, Sears was a very stable company. And so he was really pressing for that, and I wanted to teach school. And so he now regrets that I tell people this, but it was the most major conflict I've ever had. My dad and I have a very harmonious bond, and he really felt like I was making probably more a financial mistake, but also a career mistake. But he had impressed upon me since I was a little girl that I could do whatever I wanted and that I should not let my gender stand in my way. He was very much ahead of his time in terms of women taking roles of leadership. And he felt that he had groomed me for leadership and that's where I should go. And I had no interest in the business world whatsoever. And I remember arguing with him and crying and saying, I don't care if Sears sells tires or shirts or anything. I want to teach. I want to make a difference in the world. And so that's what I did.
So I want to back up again just a little bit. You've talked a little about how this change in your faith and your faith community. Mm-hmm. When and how did that come about?
In that first year of attending high school in California, a young girl that I became friends with invited me to her church. And I had never heard of the First Christian Church. I didn't know what that meant. I was a mainline Lutheran. But she invited me to attend the youth group and the Bible study that was held there. And I was just amazed. I went to the Bible study and I thought, all these years of being in the Lutheran church, which I have still great admiration for, and definitely where I was instilled with a sense of awe for God's greatness and a great reverence for worship. But suddenly we were sitting there with open Bibles and I was discovering the power of the word and the inspiration of the word. And it was life-changing for me. And so I drifted away from the Lutheran church, and eventually the rest of my family followed. And I feel that that time period for me was a time of what I would call awakening. I think, you know, my faith was already very deep. I had a strong passion for the Lord and for serving, but I didn't really understand how to expand it. And I think that those years in my high school youth group opened up to me the wonders of the Word and created a hunger in it for me. And so, that really changed everything for me.
So it sounds like when you made that decision that your parents were okay with that. Was there any pushback on that front, the church part?
The church part, no. They had been very open-minded about that. College, not so much. That took a little while for them to grow into accepting. You know, my dad now realizes that he was privileged to be a part of an era in the world of business that doesn't exist anymore, that without a college education, he was able to just work his way up the ladder. It was a unique time. He stayed with General Motors his entire career and left successfully, and I'm very proud of him. He handled himself with integrity throughout his career and was given accolades for that. But that was a unique time, and I don't think that the story would have been the same for me if I had followed in his footsteps. But as far as the faith goes, no, they became very excited actually to see me grow, to see the way I was embracing a way of life, not just advocating a faith, but really changing the way that I lived and the decisions that I made. And they were very proud of that. They loved my group of friends who were all very active in the church as well. I think as parents, you know, they were really relieved that I was with a quote good crowd. And so, yeah, it was a very sweet time of my life, one that I will always cherish.
So you've said a number of times that teaching was what you really wanted to do.
Yes.
So tell me about your teaching career.
Well, it was very short-lived because God likes to surprise us with changes. So I taught school for 2 years in Inglewood, California, right down by the Los Angeles airport during a very turbulent time in the inner city of Los Angeles. It was a time that was a lot of racial tensions going on there. And I taught at a very small Christian school that was about 98% Black. And here I was, a naive little 22-year-old fresh out of college and teaching sixth grade, and loved it. Loved my students. Through them, I had opportunity to attend some of the churches. Some of them were a part of. Reverend Evie Hill was the pastor of Zion Baptist Church in Los Angeles, which was an on-fire Baptist church and very big in the movement. And I remember being invited to their church, and the service lasted about 3 hours, and it was wild and fun, and I loved it. But it was during my second year of teaching there that the church that I had attended in high school, and by that time I had gotten married, asked me to attend some meetings that they were having as they were making some vision plans for the future. And at that time, what they presented to me was that Thousand Oaks was growing as a community, and a lot of young families were coming in, and that they could foresee that reaching those families was vital to really grow the church. And so they were presenting this entire thing to me of, we're looking for someone who we think has a strong faith in the Lord, who could really be innovative with children, who could create programs, who's a go-getter. And they gave me this whole profile. And throughout that entire meeting, I thought, well, because I'm sort of fresh out of college, they are explaining all of this to me because they feel that I'll have some contacts with some of my friends. And at the end of the meeting, they said, so what do you think? And I said, well, I think I have some friends that probably fit that profile. And one of the women who was on the personnel committee said, no, this is kind of a job interview for you. We'd like to know if you'd like to come on staff at the church and take on this new role as a family pastor. And I said, probably not, but thank you for asking me. I said, I'm happy where I am. And they said, would you pray about it? Which, of course, you know, are fated words. And I said, I'll pray about it, but I really thank you, but I don't think that this is for me. I said I was a girl who went through Bible college kind of making jokes that I was never going to be a pastor's wife like the rest of a lot of my friends. And so I went home and I told my husband and I said, it seems to me to be pretty out of the box. And he said, I think it's what you were born to do.
So did that surprise you when he said that?
Very much, very much. And so I did commit to prayer and talked to some of my close friends from Bible college and got that same affirmation. And so I came on staff in 1980 with the agreement that I would start part-time. I was still teaching school and commuting every day. So I would leave my house at 4 a.m, drive downtown to Inglewood, teach school, get out of school at 3. It took about an hour and a half in LA traffic to get back to my home. And then I would make dinner and then go over to the church and work until late at night. And so it was a wild time, but I was also young. So I did that for that first 6 months. And then when that school year ended, they moved me to full time. And a year later, they ordained me. And I have spent the rest of my life as a pastor. And I do believe that it was the calling of my heart, but I would have never thought that prior to that time.
So up until then, is it safe to say that you had never had a seminary class or?
I was required to have, you know, Bible as a minor, but no, I had not had seminary class, which made me very insecure when I first went into that role. And that was something that I protested in the early years when the church ordained me. I actually kind of pushed back against the eldership and said, I don't have a seminary degree. And they felt very strongly that I already had a strong understanding of scripture and an ability to communicate that. And in fact, they quickly moved my role. I went from family pastor to eventually an associate pastor role and later did get a master's in ministry. Went back to school and did that. But it was something that was a personal insecurity for me. But I will say that to this moment, my amazement is the way that the Lord provides and equips and supplies. There were many times that, many times that I felt that he was saying things through me or to me that were way beyond my own capacity, way beyond. And I still feel that way.
Can you give us an example or two?
Well, I think, you know, one of the earliest times that it came to me was that I remember I had only been on staff at the church for about a year. And tragically, one of our very, very involved and active members took his own life and did so by taking his life in his car in our church parking lot with a note that it would be then up to us to tell his family. And I remember thinking, I am not equipped to go and talk to his young sons about what has happened. I don't have training in this. I don't have a seminary degree. I shouldn't be the one. And I remember driving over to their home and just being filled with such sorrow and trepidation and just praying my heart out and saying, Lord, I don't know how to do this. I don't know what to say. I don't want to knock on their door. I don't want to be the one. And you should have picked somebody who was smarter or more skilled or more trained. But what happened in that moment of telling them and then ministering to their family, and it was a family with two young children, but then also older children from a previous marriage, was their feedback to me of, we're so glad it was you. You comforted us so much. There was so many positive feedback comments, and that continued to be the pattern so often. And I say this with complete sincerity. I would leave those kind of settings and think, I know who I am. I know my limits. I'm kind of an airhead. I don't think that I should be doing this. And yet I felt many times that God supplied. And I think, too, my passion for the word, I was always a really ardent and still am student of the word. And I feel like the word teaches us in a way that I would just describe almost the mystery of the Holy Spirit, that he provides that insight that goes far beyond any classwork that we might take. So to this moment, I still am in awe and wonder of who he is. And I never go into any setting overly confident in me.
Well, I'm sure there are lots more stories, but we're going to jump ahead a little bit.
Uh-huh.
When and how did you find the Mennonites?
Well, in my years in the independent Christian church, I became associated with a wonderful friend. His name was Hal Schrader. And Hal had been, as I was, very active in the whole network of the independent Christian church. And it is a movement, the restoration movement, that kind of arose during the early 1800s in areas like Kentucky and Virginia, and became very popular as an offshoot of the Disciples of Christ and the Church of Christ. And so we were linked together in what I would just call a brotherhood or a network, where there were independent churches all over the world, but no denominational ties. That was a part of the tenet of the church. And so Hal and I had many, many associations with one another as friends and professionals. And in probably, I would say, the early 90s, he migrated from the independent Christian church to the Mennonite church and became a serving pastor for a Mennonite congregation in the Phoenix area. And at one point took a very dramatic stand for peace with his brothers and sisters at his church. And it was broadcast on the Phoenix News when there was a threat against the mosque in their area from some very, very, I'm just going to say, violent protesters. And that caught my attention, and I started to listen to some of Hal's sermons online now and then. And a few years later, Hal was killed in a very sad motorcycle accident. And certainly around that time, then all of us who loved him, and he was very loved and a very powerful preacher, I started listening to a lot of his sermons online. And I would say to my friends on staff, I said, you know, if I ever leave the independent Christian church, or if I do move to Portland to be near my kids, I think I'm going to find a Mennonite church. I really resonate with the emphasis on the Sermon on the Mount and living out a peace-filled existence. And I've always been a pacifist at heart. And so I moved to Portland in January of 2018 to be near my adult children and my soon-to-be-born granddaughter. And the first church I attended 3 days after I moved in was Portland Mennonite. And I felt very much at home there, but wanted to be thorough in what I was exploring. And so for a year, I attended churches all over the community, all the way out to Gresham and down into Estacada and everywhere, sometimes attending two churches on a Sunday. And about every third week, I would come back to Portland Mennonite. And finally, one of my sons said, "What is it that you're waiting to figure out? You already know that's where you want to be." And so that's where I landed. And I feel that Hal sort of inspired that for me and opened the door.
So Portland Mennonite is actually the first Mennonite church that you attended.
Correct. Correct. I had never been a part of it before, so it's been a great learning experience. I attended the new members class with Rod, and I've been on a learning curve since then, and really miss, of course, like everyone else, the opportunity to worship corporately right now. But I have valued this time during the whole pandemic. I've really valued being able to draw from the sermons, and I participated in a racial trio with your own husband and have done some different things like that, kind of vicariously through different online sources. So that's been a blessing.
Well, again, we've only touched the tip of the iceberg, but since you've only been in Portland a few years, I think it's okay for me to still say welcome to Portland.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
In my almost 24 years of having lived here, maybe I can say that.
Well, thank you.
And we're delighted to have you as part of Portland Mennonite, and we
thanks
all
so
can't
much.
Wait until we get back together in person.
I bet. That's how I feel too.
And thank you so much, Karen, for taking the time to share some of these wonderful stories with us and giving us just a glimpse into your life.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much for this opportunity. And thank you for the warm welcome that both you and Harold have offered to me on many occasions during the time that I've been here. I'm grateful for it.
You are most welcome. And thank you for joining us for this episode of COVID Chronicles. If something you heard raised questions or you discovered a connection, take the opportunity to reach out and continue the conversation. I'm your host, Gloria Nussbaum. Until next time, stay well and keep the faith.